Intelligent Transportation Systems Podcast. This is the ITS Podcast episode 10 for February 2014. Hello and welcome. Please make yourself comfortable. I'm Javier Sánchez Medina from the IEEE Intelligent Transportation Systems Society. We have carefully prepared a very nice episode, this time talking about the role of women in engineering, plus an amazing interview on human factors and transportation from an industrial perspective. We also have a transportation and history mini section with some remarkable historical example of women engineers. And that's it. I really hope you enjoy it as much as we do. Here we go.
This is the news mini section for episode 10, February 2014. We are delighted to invite you to a very interesting chat. Please join Dr. Anya Petruskaya, recipient of the 2012 ITSS PhD Best Dissertation Award, for a live chat on February 10, 2014 at 3 p.m. East Standard Time. A research consultant at Stanford University, Dr. Petruskaya will discuss her research field in robot reliable perception. She will also share her experience and will give career advice to future engineers. You can view the broadcast and will have the chance to ask her questions, for example, about her career in science and engineering, for a technical presentation, and what led her to study robotics. The one-hour chat is partially supported by the Intelligent Transportation Systems Society and will be produced by the IEEE Women in Engineering Committee. Check out this podcast website at itsp.ciei.com. You can find the Ustream link to join the live chat, and also more information is available at the Women in Engineering Facebook page. Please join Anya and other friends for a fascinating exchange.
Transportation in history. Women in engineering. Some years ago, if you go to an engineering classroom, you would notice that most of the students tend to be male. Luckily, this has changed, and it may be just a question of time to see more and more women sitting on responsibility posts at big engineering companies. There has always been women interested in engineering, and some of them did remarkable contributions. For example, in ancient Greek Alexandria, in the 4th century, Hypatia was a woman philosopher and mathematician when philosophy was really close to engineering. There is some controversy on whether she or not invented the hydrometer, but what seems more possible is that she gave advice to a former student of her, Synesius of Cyrene, on the construction of an astrolabe and a hydroscope. Another historical example is Tabitha Babbitt. She was an American toolmaker who invented the first circular saw on the first half of the 19th century. Tabitha didn't apply for a patent for her invention that improved so significantly the works of good. The first woman in the United States to apply for a patent was Mary Dixon Kies in 1809 for her method of weaving straw. In the other shore of the Atlantic, there is also that example of Sarah Gappy, an English lady that invented and patented a system for suspension bridge foundations in the first half of the 19th century. A fantastic fact about that lady is that she never sought to charge a license fee for her invention. Instead, she handled it for free, as she thought it was for the public benefit. She and her family were also involved in the US Great Western Railway construction as a sort of consultant. In 1841, she wrote a letter advising them to plant willows and poplars to stabilize embankments. There are more and more examples, some of them regarding transportation engineering. For example, if you're listening to this podcast in your car and it's raining out there, please turn on the windshield wipers, invented by Mary Anderson in 1903. Please check out this podcast post at itsp.ciei.com for links with some examples of the tremendous past and present contributions of women to engineering. Have you ever used your smartphone or your tablet PC while driving? Well, you shouldn't. However, we may be seeing more and more often tactile devices in our vehicle dashboards, but they must be carefully designed or it may become a new safety threat. Are you curious? Here's today's interview. My guest today is Cristina Daverri Monreal. She is a specialist on human factors applied to intelligent transportation research. She's an active collaborator on a number of projects with car makers like BMW, Honda, etc. This is not the first time we talk about human factors in the ITS podcast. We interviewed Professor Frank Drews in our 2013 September episode. He's a human factors specialist from the American Psychological Association. However, with Dr. Olaverri today, we are interested in her industrial insights. She earned a master's degree from Ludwig Maximilian University of Munich in 2002, and she received her PhD in 2006 in cooperation with BMW. Dr. Olaverri has also worked as a researcher at several institutions in the US, but is pleased to be back now in Germany at the Technical University of Munich. Hello, Cristina. Welcome to the ITS podcast.
Hello, Javi. Thank you very much for extending an invitation and for welcoming me here today.
Right. Cristina, could you please introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. My background is in computer science with an emphasis on human-machine interaction. I studied computational linguistics, computer science, and phonetics at the Ludwig Maximilian Universität in Munich, and then completed my PhD focusing on the topic of internationalization and localization of driver information systems. And I did this all in cooperation with BMW in the human-machine interaction department. The different acceptance of the iDrive controller as input modality to enter information in the driver information system in several countries was the basis for this research. Mm-hmm. I concluded that the structure and organization of such information should be adapted to different cultures, and for this reason I proposed an automatic system to accomplish this task. Afterwards, I moved to the United States, and then there I work in the industry in the same field of software localization and internationalization, and later I work at the University of Porto in Portugal, where I went back to research and worked on VANETs, focusing on human factors. Right now, I am with the Technical University in Munich. I have been there already for 2 years, and I'm investigating complex dynamic scenarios that are critical in decision-making processes, such as driving a vehicle. And my goal is to minimize the barrier between the user and the technical systems the user is interacting with. I work on vehicular multifunctional systems as well as driver behavior, driving simulation tools, and generally speaking, research concerning intelligent transportation systems.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Human factors, again, why? Could you please explain why can't we just let the scientists and engineers to do their job and advance the vehicular technology as far and as fast as they can?
Yeah, I think the engineers should, of course, continue with the job, and vehicular technology should always be advanced. Nowadays, a diverse array of services and driver assistance systems are continuously being developed, and these in-vehicle applications interact with the driver, providing information or requiring input information from the driver. However, we need to take into account that the information required from this in-vehicle devices must be useful, simple, and also well-organized. For this reason, it's very important to have an intuitive and simplistic approach to the design, enhancing driving behavior and also experience. New cars are equipped with innovative driver information systems or advanced driver assistance systems that have been conceived to support the driver. However, in some cases, it seems that human factors have been not appropriately considered during this design process, and instead emphasis has been placed only on the underlying technology of the new services. As a result, this system generates an ever-increasing level of exposure to information that a driver must mentally process, and such a considerable additional demand of cognitive processing tasks that arise from this interaction can lead to a delay or worse, to an interruption in the cognitive processing of road-related information. This can have consequences such as a longer reaction time when a certain action is required from the driver that can affect the road safety. And for this reason, in-vehicle systems must be easy to use and they have to facilitate access to applications independently of the technical knowledge of the user. I think an optimal user interface should enable an intuitive interaction with the in-vehicle devices and, of course, not increase the cognitive load of the driver. In light of this, it is very important to investigate the ideal manner of interacting with a variety of sources of information so that we can establish guidelines for optimizing these systems.
Mm-hmm. But does your colleagues in your research field make friends with engineers, or do they run away from you fan spoilers?
Well, human factors deals with the design of devices that fit the human body and the skills we need to carry out any task. So we call these cognitive abilities. And the field of human factors involves several academic disciplines and is for this reason what we call a multidisciplinary field. For example, we have people involved from psychology, biomechanics, industrial design, graphic design, statistics, anthropometry, and of course, engineers. People with all these different backgrounds work closely together to reach the best results that best fit the needs of the user of a certain product. So answering your question, nobody runs away from anybody because we all work together and cooperate to produce the best possible product for the user.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I see. Christina, how is it working as a researcher for BMW or Honda? In a, maybe you would agree with me, kind of conceptual or theoretical work field. Do you perceive interest in their side or to modulate their edge developments according to your recommendations, or is this just a cosmetic? Is human factors really important for these big companies?
Mm-hmm. This is actually a very interesting question. What you have to keep in mind is that in the end, what the car industry wants is, of course, to be successful in the market. Mm-hmm. For this reason, considering safety aspects is a high priority for them. And not only this, but also the applicability and fulfillment of the product for the user. To be accepted in the market, the product in question will have to comply with certain characteristics, like enable an efficient and effective use to perform a driving task, what we call the usability. And also, it will have to be valuable for the user because of the hedonic characteristics. This is the same that saying that it creates an experience that can be enjoyed by the user.
Mm-hmm.
This all is what we call the user experience and involves the person's behavior, the attitudes, and the emotions about using a particular system or device. It also includes the affective, meaningful, and valuable aspect of the interaction with a product and product ownership. And also, as I said before, how a user considers the product in terms of ease of use and efficiency. As you see, this perception regarding a certain vehicle in our case is very subjective. So car manufacturers are very interested in providing the customers with vehicles that enhance safety while providing the best driving experience for the drivers. And this can be achieved by a particularly attractive design, also including, for example, entertainment systems, or by further applications that support the driver in the driving task. Here is where specialists in human factors can contribute with their recommendations.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Let me place a hard one now, Christina, very related to what you have just said. We have recently interviewed a big dog on automated driving. I think you know him, Professor Alberto Broggi from University of Parma in Italy. He made some challenging future forecasts about fully automated driving where no human would be allowed to drive anymore. So I think this is quite controversial. Even many scientists, not just car users that love that user experience you were talking about, many of them say that this is not happening. They say that we may be seeing more and more driving assistance systems, but in the end, there will be needed a human in control. Where do you put yourself? Will we be able to trust our lives to a computer or in our daily mobility? What do you think?
Yes. Well, first of all, yes, of course, I know Alberto Broggi and his amazing pioneer work in autonomous driving. I think everybody knows Alberto Broggi, by the way. And answering your question, I actually belong to the people who think autonomous driving will come and a driver will not be necessary for driving. I think from the technical point of view, we are really, really very close. Only in rare occasions will interventions from a human be required, and so all vehicle passengers will have the freedom of doing other things while traveling, making the driving experience more akin to that of being a trained passenger. Collecting data relying on sensors to identify, for example, the distance to the preceding vehicle or the information shown on traffic signs is already a reality. And getting information from other vehicles in the surrounding environment through, for example, vehicle-to-vehicle communication will also allow being ready for information related to traffic jams, for example. However, if the automation is not total and we drive a vehicle with only a certain degree of automation, I think we will have to take care and still be attentive to the road. Here I see a certain danger of drivers playing a less active or even passive role behind the wheel that can lead to a situation that we don't have to be facing in terms of road safety in case of a failure of a system.
Christina, if we look back in time, I don't know, 50 years ago, cars were pretty different. They were, in some sense, easier to drive with less things to learn. They were also less powerful. But today we have all of these passive and active safety systems. What do you think is the general balance now? You can probably provide us with some insights of this. Is all this technological development reducing actual risks? Or on the contrary, because of the amazing comfort and great power we feel today, we may be riding even more dangerous cars than we were a few decades ago. Do you think the overall tendency is positive with this regard?
Yeah, I think the tendency is a positive one. Now we drive powerful, fast cars, and actually we love it. The assistance provided by the systems in the vehicle is also welcome. Otherwise, nobody would buy cars that incorporate this kind of technology, for which in most of the cases we need to pay extra cash. Not only have cars evolved in time, but also driving conditions and also number of cars on the road have changed. Everybody drives any kind of vehicle, so traffic is high everywhere. It is also difficult to find parking in most cities. We have to deal with a lot of issues like being vigilant on the road and sharing it with other motor vehicles, but also with bicycles and always watching for pedestrians and being ready for unexpected events. And then I would say driving is not always a pleasant experience. It can be stressful, and I think the support and warning provided by an assistance system is always welcome. Contrary to the popular belief, there is a report from 2011 from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, stating that the most frequent cause of driver distraction is being distracted by another occupant of the vehicle. It follows talking or listening on a mobile phone. Actions like adjusting climate controls, radio, or CD were not a cause of distraction as frequent as one might think, since they were at the same level in terms of distraction as eating or drinking in the vehicle. Manipulating also onboard navigation systems was even behind in the ranking list, being compared to adjusting windows, doors, locks, mirror, seat, etc.
Christina, you are also involved on the use of serious games in vehicle to affect somehow driver's behavior. Can you please explain what is that concept, serious games?
Yeah, sure. Serious games are games that are often used to develop skills in educational environments. They are based on teaching practices and designed in an instructional way and are used in a serious context like higher education, healthcare, military, etc. In the same way, they can also be used to train drivers. A regular training can significantly improve driver behavior, especially if the driver is provided with a constructive feedback or is rewarded with some kind of a score system. Serious games incorporate many different concepts of learning, such as learning by doing and naturally from mistakes as well. If serious games are effective and engaging, they also motivate the players to play frequently and long, promoting in this fashion the players' memorization abilities. For all these reasons, a serious driving game might enable a long-term behavioral shift towards safer driving, and they represent a perfect framework to train drivers frequently towards a driving performance enhancement and also to evaluate the driving performance.
So you think you can make drivers more responsible and careful through that?
Yes, of course, because of this educational purpose. Serious games can mimic different driving scenarios and different driving conditions so that the driver can be particularly trained to deal with various traffic conditions. For example, exposing drivers to stressful driving situations with a lot of traffic within this controlled and safe environment can be effective to learn how to deal in certain situations, keeping calm and being polite with other drivers.
Okay. Well, we now need to make a short break, but this interesting interview will continue in no time, so please stay tuned. Hello again. Do you hear every ITS podcast? Well, thanks for that. And don't you think there might be many colleagues out there that would like it as much as you do? Come on, give us a hand. If you're a good follower and help us disseminating this new publication, you may even win an iPad. We are running a contest to find the best follower of this show, and it will be open until April 30, so you still have time. During this time period, we will determine who is the most active listener based on activities to inform others about ITS podcasts using, for example, Facebook, Google+, Twitter, or LinkedIn. And if you really want to win, you may go even beyond and disseminate our show using your university distribution email list or any other broadcast way you can imagine. We just need to get proof of your efforts to our email, itsspodcast@gmail.com, itsspodcast@gmail.com. The contest winner will be announced on the May 2014 ITS podcast episode. And now let's get back to Dr. Olavarre's interview. Thank you. Okay, we're back with our guest today, Dr. Cristina Olavarre, talking about human factors in the industry of intelligent transportation systems. Cristina, I've learned you work also on the influence of the new in-car systems to be like smartphone apps. Do you think this fashion of smartphone applications, etc., may be poisoning the minds of the new cars designers so they make enjoyable and fancy systems that also attract too much of the driver's attention? For example, touch screens that you have to stare at to precisely manipulate? What do you think?
Yeah, this is a very interesting question. I am glad you asked, because it is true that some car manufacturers have already started to include further applications in the vehicle apart from driver assistance systems. I'm talking about these applications that we can find in other mobile environments like smartphones or tablets. These applications could represent a further source of distraction for the driver. I see some challenges related to this trend, specifically the limited space within the car, limiting the organization of the information. For this reason, some manufacturers have also began to reorganize this traditional vehicular space, such as the instrument panel or even the center console, sharing them with digital screens in order to cope with this space available inside a vehicle. Even the rear view mirror and the windshield are being used to display information through head-up displays. Proper vehicle information visibility could facilitate driver information with device controls, assuring a smoother operation and reduction of distraction potential. Thus, it's very important to examine the visual demand these devices require while driving. Relevant in-vehicle driver information should be able to be identified at a glance. Also, the use of one or another input and output modality to interact with applications that still allow the driver to pay attention to the road need to be further investigated. Modalities such as gesture control, including touch or speech, are intuitive and complement existing haptic controls. However, they also have drawbacks. It has been shown, for example, that the speech can be a distraction factor that causes to divert attention from the road. Additionally, the speech recognition technology still needs to be further developed in order to create robust systems that are not affected by background noise. Because you mentioned also touch screens, they have become increasingly more incorporated in an in-vehicle context. They enabled the management of vehicle functions that were until now controlled by hard keys or rotation controls, for example, temperatures or wipers. However, we cannot expect the drivers to interact with them like with tablets or with smartphones. In order to have drivers press the right buttons without having to take their eyes off the road for too long, these screens need to provide the driver with tactile feedback and also contain visible and easy to recognize information. Actually, it should be studied if the manipulation of certain functions should be allowed also during driving. Touch screens work well for small mobile devices, but in an automotive context, they demand a further effort from the driver if they are not really easy to reach. So the distance to them is an important factor in order to avoid shoulder and neck problems that are related to arm elevation.
And do you think we should expect a universal approach in this sense, with more and more ADAS systems making it to lower-end models, with the interface of these systems need to change to fit the masses? What do you think?
Yes, I think that with the number of in-vehicle information and driver assistance systems and also the complexity of their task growing at a very high rate in near future, we will need a clear understanding of their capabilities, and these systems will have to include user interfaces that don't distract the driver and don't increase the driver's mental workload when he's interacting with them. Traffic safety is the main priority. Also, the location of these interfaces in a central display or distributed along different screens in the vehicle is a factor to be considered. Intuitive interfaces that provide the driver with a proper in-vehicle warning and function location that enhance visibility and reduces the distraction potential will be the big challenge.
Mm-hmm. Christina, I also noticed that you are involved in analyzing the change on driver behavior from combustion engines to electric engines vehicles. Are you noting big differences there? Are the electric vehicle drivers nicer when driving around in so silent and eco-friendly vehicles?
Yes. Well, I don't know if they are nicer, but to answer the question, electric vehicles represent the beginning or a new technological time. They are being gradually introduced into the market, and they already represent a big chance for sustainable mobility in which the dependence on fossil fuels can be significantly reduced and road traffic emissions minimized. This new concept entails an energy efficiency gain. And for this reason, electrical vehicles are a promising alternative to the internal combustion engine, allowing for individual mobility without the environmental problems that the other cars are causing. When a driver has been driving for a while with an electric vehicle, we have noticed that his driving behavior patterns with vehicles with combustion engines have changed. And these changes in the driving profile have consequences for energy consumption. In terms of the effect of a silent environment, electric cars don't provide the drivers with a feedback regarding the car's driving dynamics characteristics. For this reason, one of the research goals in this field is to find out a sound that overcomes this potential drawback and that also alerts other road users of the presence of an electric vehicle, ensuring thus a bigger road safety. The best and more appropriate sounds are for this reason being currently investigated. For example, a possibility would be to have several sounds to select from, providing the driver with an unique and personal driving experience. Since driving an electric vehicle is already a user experience, to equip it with sounds that are tailored for the driver would increase even more the positive impressions of such vehicles. If the drivers are more careful and less aggressive than when driving combustion engine, I really cannot say, but they actually should be, since electric vehicle owners are very proud of them and are also convinced eco-friendly drivers.
Mm-hmm. Christina, you may have inside knowledge on how will be private cars in a few decades or years. Is there any human factor improved system that these car makers are trying to implement and you think will be a hit in the near future, something you can tell us without getting into trouble?
Yes. Well, I think in the near future, all the technologies we have already addressed during this conversation will consolidate, particularly the technology around the autonomous vehicles will improve, and also the implementation of in-vehicle applications that is based on car-to-car communication or car-to-infrastructure, and the applications that allow for connection to our mobile devices, household appliances, or office applications to the car. The network connection will improve, and more people will have access to these kind of applications at a lower cost. Our car will not only be a transportable media, it will also be our second office or our second home. I think it will allow us for privacy to perform, for example, business meetings as well. I think it will facilitate more entertainment possibilities to families traveling with children, and also will keep them occupied during long journeys. The charging stations for electric vehicles will also increase as well as the range that these vehicles will be able to drive without charging. And this is how I envision future vehicles. Human factors will be essential to this all development, ensuring a driver-centric design and also contributing to the best possible user experience, taking into account their road safety.
Sounds like fun. Well, Christina, you are our first female interviewee in this show. Regarding that, what is the gender mix you perceive in your field? For example, when you go to a human factors conference.
So I am really the first female that you interviewed. I'm really surprised because actually I'm not the only one working on this field. But well, as I mentioned before, human factors is a multidisciplinary field, and people with different backgrounds are involved. And because it is so heterogeneous, the number of male and female researchers tend to be well distributed. We all know in some fields it is easier to find more men than women. However, I think this will belong soon to the past. And what really matters is to have good professionals in every field, without taking care of the age, the ethnic group, of the gender. I think that the number of female and male students in engineering, for example, can already be compared. But these changes, as we already know, in higher levels in the industry as well as in the academy, where it is actually still easier to find more men in leading positions. However, this is something that some governments are trying to change, introducing measures such as increasing the quota of women in high positions.
I fully agree with that. I hope this question becomes useless soon. Very well, Christina. Thank you very much. Thanks for shedding more light in this particular and hot research topic.
Thank you for your nice interview. It has really been a pleasure talking to you.
Great. Goodbye, Christina.
Goodbye.
Well, this one is over. We now need to close this episode. But don't be sad, we'll be back in just a month, and you can always listen our previous episodes, or send us comments on how they were, or suggest who we should interview, for example. We do listen our loved followers' suggestions. This podcast is sponsored by the IEEE Italian Transportation Systems Society. Website designed and managed by the Innovation Center for the Information Society at the University of Las Palmas de Gran Canaria in Spain. Soundtrack developed by Rubicon. Language advisory by Manuel Arbelo and Professor Sean Williams from Clemson University, South Carolina. We'll be back soon bringing you again the cutting edge of science at the Intelligent Transportation Systems podcast. Thanks for listening, and drive safe.